The gates to the Rose Garden are now open. Welcome to my world. You are listening to Talk That Talk with Danielle Moneyham, a reflective conversation where I share the lessons I've learned on this journey called life. I don't have all the answers, but I do have plenty of questions. My name is Danielle Moneyham, and this is my love letter to the world, where I let my soul speak. Let's talk. Hello, friends. The gates to the Rose Garden are open. Welcome back to the show. This season is dedicated to origin stories and understanding the power of our journeys. I'm thrilled to be joined by an old friend and current film expert, E-Man of E-Man's Movie Reviews. E-Man usually gives his audience the good, the bad, the reason, and the rating about his movies. But today we are going to learn his origin story and what drives him to create spoiler-free content and incredible breakdowns. Welcome to the show, E-Man.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. How are you doing this evening?
I'm tired. Like, it's just, I mean, I'm not even exaggerating. I was just talking to my wife about how tired I am, which I do almost every day with her because, you know, creating content is a huge ordeal. It's like another full-time job, you know. I mean, dare I say, I probably put more time and effort into all of this stuff than my normal 9-to-5. So, yeah, I'm tired, but I'm happy to be here, though. So
you're building your brand while working a full-time job and still being a full partner, husband, and human?
All of that. Yeah. Yeah. Dad, too. Yeah, I got kids. So, you know, that's already draining as it is. But yeah, no, this is, I mean, you know, it's one of those unexpected challenges that comes with it, you know, and even though I'm doing film criticism and stuff, I tell people, like, everybody's a film critic. Everybody's got an opinion. The only difference that separates us from the pros or whatever is how much work are you going to put in communicating your opinion? The fact that I'm putting in, like, hours and hours and days just to give you, like, 12 minutes of something, that's the difference. It's that behind-the-scenes grind, so to speak, that's really the difference maker.
So when you watch movies and TV now, is it entertainment or is it work or is it both?
You know what? I try so hard to make sure that it's a combination of both. Because, you know, when you do start working these long hours and trying to cultivate content for folks, the last thing you want to do is make it feel like work. Your passion needs to be the driving force, not even just in what I do, but in anything you do, really. I mean, this is why I do this for no pay, you know, because if it wasn't the passion, I'd just be like, you know what, screw this, I'm done. But yeah, I mean, like, if I'm watching something, whether it's a movie or a TV show, I have to be invested in it. Because, and here's the thing, if I'm not, you won't be either. Because if I'm talking to you about something, you don't want to hear about something I had to watch because somebody told me to. You want to see people watch things that they're excited about or that moves them emotionally. So if there's anything that you see me post or talk about, it's because I care in some way, shape, or form. And if I don't, I just skip it. Like, you know, I'm not going to.
So what led you to create E-Man's Movie Reviews? How did we get here?
Whew. So thank you. Shout out Facebook Memories, because I totally forgot about this. It was in 2013. It all started with a post. You know, I just made a little, I forget what I was seeing. I think I saw like The Dark Knight or something like that. You know, phenomenal movie. It was real dope. And, you know, I posted my opinion. You know, got like 2-3 likes or whatever. Okay, fine, whatever. Then I saw another movie and I posted another little quick thing. Like, man, I really like this. I like that. This is dope. Y'all should go see it. And then, you know, I just kept doing it after every time I'd watch the movie. And nobody was really responding. Nobody was really checking for it. So I stopped. You know, I was just like, all right, whatever, you know. And then people started hitting me up like, yo, what, hello, are you going to tell us what happened? Like, what we need to know. And I was like, I didn't know y'all cared. So, like, at that point, I was like, oh, okay, so this is a thing. Okay, cool. So I just kept going with it. And, like, after a couple more posts, people was like, man, you need to, like, have a website or something. So I said, okay. So I figured I learned how to make a website, and, you know, I put all my reviews on the website, and then I started making a Facebook fan page. And after that, you know, fun fact, I actually formerly, before I was E-Man's Movie Reviews, I was Spoiler-Free. That was my unique name back in the day, but that clearly didn't work out. But yeah, you know, like I made the websites and the social media handles and stuff. And it was really, that's when I started to learn how much of a grind all of the building a brand really is, because you think you're going into it just to create content, but this ain't the field of dreams. It ain't, if you build it, they will come. You know, people got enough distractions out there to entertain themselves. So not only did I have to learn how to become my own webmaster, become my own social media manager, I also had to become my own publicist. I also had to become my own promoter, which, again, each one of those things are a full-time job, you know. So I'm writing, I'm shooting, I'm editing, I'm promoting, I'm investing as well. You got to put your money where your mouth is. And if you don't invest in yourself, who will? So I had to learn how to navigate just the marketing side of things. And when it's your money, it matters a little bit more, you know, because I could tell you some horror stories. Like I did my tax returns one time. I was like, I spent how much in 1 year for what? It was definitely a grind. And then there were definitely a lot of, you know, challenges, barriers, because nobody tells you, especially for Black folks, just to be honest, we don't have that space to really have a lot of guideposts. You know, I mean, one of the reasons I really pursued this more was because I didn't see enough people like us. I didn't hear people like us talking about movies, giving our opinions. And it really started to open my eyes in terms of the industry at large. When you start to think about movies that are considered to be good movies or bad movies, a lot of that is shaped by opinions from old white men. And it's not an indictment on old white people or anything. It's just, that's just the way that the industry is shaped. So when you have decades upon decades, you know, no shade to them, but when you hear the Richard Ropers and the Roger Eberts of the world, you take their word for gold because that's it. You know, it's them and like people that like them that are giving their opinions on things. You don't see a lot of Black women giving their opinion on movies centered about women. Me jumping into this space, I was like, yo, like, I didn't see anybody doing it the way I wanted to do it or the way I wanted to hear it or present it to me, so I did it myself. One of the other things that I started to gravitate towards was no spoilers. I hate spoilers. I mean, personally, like, before I became a critic, I hated spoilers. I'm like, yo, if I'm about to pay money to go see this story, this movie, don't tell me nothing. Like, don't ruin it for me, you know? I want to go for that ride and enjoy what the movie is trying to have me ride. And it was like a prominent film critic, actually, that I read one of their reviews one day, and they spoiled the mess out the movie, and it pissed me off so bad. And then I was just like, all right, I got to do this myself. I got to do it. I got to be spoiler-free. I saw all these other critics online giving like 5-page essays on a movie. I'm like, bro, I just need to know, is it good? Is it bad? Like, just give it to me raw and dirty. Like, you ain't gotta do all this, you know? So that's really what came together to help cultivate my approach to doing film criticism. And then, of course, it just started to grow from there. You know, it was just like, okay, well, we could do movies, and then later on, I'm starting to experiment with TV shows and stuff. And then even from there, I was just like, okay, well, I don't want to just be a film critic. Like, I like other things. I'm a Black nerd. I'm a blurred, you know? So I like Japanese animation. I like cartoons. I like a whole bunch of stuff. And it really just made me go towards the direction of becoming more of a social media influencer in terms of just putting my opinion out there. And lo and behold, you find a lot of like-minded people, you know, start to follow you. And, you know, it's been a very fun ride. I mean, I don't think I've reached any type of pinnacle yet, but this is definitely what I'd like to do moving forward. I need somebody to pay me though. You know, like when them checks match up the work, now we talking, but
it's coming. Claim it. It's coming. Look, it's coming.
I hope so. But you know, it's definitely a very unique journey and one I would definitely recommend for anyone seriously interested in having your voice be heard in whatever way, shape, or form.
When you first started out, did your immediate friends and family share the same vision that you had, or did they just see it as kind of like a hobby?
Hell no. Well, nobody checking for me.
I feel like a rapper. Like, I finally understand when people be like, you want to listen to my mixtape? Could you listen to my mixtape? Like, when you are a creator and nobody's behind you backing your stuff, it feels like that.
You know, the beautiful thing about that is you also get to learn who's been behind you from the jump.
Day one.
Because I can name you my day one fans.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Like, and I'm talking about back when my YouTube channel had a total of like 400-500 people for years. And that's after 130 videos being made. Nobody was checking for me. So now, when I'm now jumping at like 80,000 subscribers on YouTube, you know, I still see them day one people. Yo, E-Man, yo, this is great. Yo, man, I remember when you first started G. And I'm like, yo, these are the people I want to mess with. You know what I'm saying? And that's nothing, you know, against my friends and family, nothing. It's not like people was like, you're never going to make it, you know, because it wasn't like a full-time job. It's not like I'm going to throw everything aside to do this. But I do think that you do gain a level of appreciation for the support that you get, you know, from these people who've been behind you for years, you know. And I mean, at this point, I'm super appreciative of anybody that even bothers to listen to me, because with all the many distractions that we got nowadays online and social media, I'm like, what, you gave me 2 minutes of your time? Thank you. After every video I do, I always make sure to like, just express some appreciation and just thanks. And I try to engage with everybody as much as I can, you know, so like I'm responding to comments, I'm liking things, just so y'all know I see you too, you know. And even more so, like, if I have the opportunity to like receive free stuff, sometimes the studios will send little grab bags and stuff, I send that right back. I'm like, hey, we're doing a contest, we're doing a give, I don't need it. It's if y'all not here, I'm not here. So I constantly want to stay in that mindset, just because of I know where I came from, and I remember those days where, you know, I was grinding, nobody was checking for my CDs, you know, nobody was bumping my beats, you know. So I remember those days. They were very interesting, and I'll never forget them.
Yeah, they keep you humble, and it just reminds you of how far you've come. So I definitely understand that. Shout out to the engagement with your audience. Speaking of your audience, you said that you are a blurred, so you identify as a black nerd. Who is your audience, though, on your channel?
The funniest thing, my audience, and this also depends on the platform, right? So YouTube just so happens to be dominated by white males. So I was actually kind of shocked just to see like white conservative males, right wing sometimes. Like, I don't even talk politics on my channel. Like, that's not what it's made for. I mean, I can talk politics if we want to, but that's just not what I do. But I just noticed that for whatever reason, they're drawn to my channel. And whatever, you know, hey, if I'm your friendly neighborhood black friend that you just met, fine. You know, I'm not hating. I love everybody. But yeah, it's just one of those things that caught me by surprise, because, you know, I never really went out there trying to attract a certain demographic. You know, I was just like, yo, I like movies. Who likes movies? You know, I didn't even focus on like black movies, even quote unquote black films. I really just review whatever, again, I felt like. The one thing that I do continue, though, is even though I might appeal to an audience that doesn't always look like me, I do try my best to make sure I don't compromise myself in that sense either. So, you know, if I'm talking about a very difficult situation or a topic, so usually, what is it, race? I'm gonna go in. You know, like, I'm not going to hold back just because you don't see my black side when I'm talking about Marvel stuff. If we're talking about slavery, we're gonna talk about slavery. If the movie's about systemic racism, I'm gonna talk to you about systemic racism. So, and in the same sense, I'm not, even though I'm unapologetic with it, that doesn't mean that I approach it without tact. You know, I still want you to hear me because I also understand how people can get easily defensive. It's always that juggling act of knowing your audience and still being able to approach them in a way that you can still engage, you know, and in a respectful way. Like, if I could talk to you respectfully, then I expect you to do that with me, you know. Otherwise, that block button is heavy.
So. That block button, no heavy and ready to go.
No problem with that. No problems.
Have you experienced any barriers on your journey?
So, for sure. I mean, like, there are challenges that you will come across just for being black. And you don't know when these things are going to pop up or how or where. One example is when you're first starting off as a film critic, for example, you have to deal with PR companies. And the PR companies are the gatekeepers to the movie screenings or to interviews or whatever. And the one thing I kind of learned the hard way, and it took me years to figure this out, they don't tell you the rules. They just expect for you to just be professional, whatever that means, because there really is no definition to it, right? They just expect for you to know these things. And, you know, if you don't know them, you can get banned. For example, I didn't know what an embargo was. So I come in, I'm watching, I think the first movie I got to go see early was Straight Outta Compton. So I got to see that like months in advance, right? And I mean, I was new, I waited in line like every other person. I wasn't quote unquote press or whatever. And once I saw it, I wrote my review and I published it. And the PR folks are like, no, like that's bad. You're not supposed to do that. And I was like, well, says who? And they were like, well, you didn't follow the embargo. The embargo is basically a date at which you are able to publish things publicly. And I was like, but y'all didn't invite me to the movie. So how would I know when or where I can publish stuff? So I was like, maybe y'all should start inviting me and then I can follow your rules. And while we're at it, why don't you tell me any other rules that are there? And so not only was there like no real assistance, but the black part of it is once I did finally get quote unquote recognized as press, because of the low numbers, right? Because I didn't have a huge following when I first started. It was like I only got invited to black movies, you know? And they're like, yeah, we have an urban division. I'm like, but I cover general stuff. Like, I cover everything. Yeah, no. But this black movie that is going to go straight to DVD and nobody's going to watch, we got a seat right here for you, you know? So the challenge for me was being recognized and accepted as everybody else,
yeah,
and not just a black face or a black voice. I mean, don't get me wrong. Obviously, when those certain projects will come up, I would like that. But the problem is, again, it's industry-wide. If the black films are not getting the proper funding, well, they might not end up being that good. And if they're not that good, then people won't go see them. And if people are not going to go see them, what is my voice about to do? Because I also need numbers to get subscribers. So it's like this weird catch-22 that ends up happening. So that was just like one barrier, just in the fact that like your networking is going to be a problem, because again, there are not people that look like us, yeah, in that space. So it's kind of like I don't have somebody up high to look at and be like, hey bro, can you help me out? I need some advice or whatever. I mean, I remember I literally talked to this one person and all I wanted to do was like get some information, because they were doing contests to have people go to screenings and stuff. And I understood that you're getting this from the movie studios or something. And when I tell you, this person ghosted me so hard. And it was funny because he ghosted me and I sat right next to him in the theater, like that same day. And he acted like we ain't talking about nothing. It was fine. I was just like, this is that weird stuff, you know, because I know for me personally, because I do this too with some people, you know, like if I see other black creatives, you know, they need a hand or whatever, I might not be able to, you know, give you a full mentorship or not, but I'm not going to ghost you. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not going to sit here and just, like, not tell you nothing. Now, don't get me wrong. If I'm busy, I'm busy. But, you know, if I have the opportunity to, like, say something. Like, I just had a sister hit me up from, she's in college. She wants to do this. And she's like, how do I just start? And I was like, look, boom. All you got to do is start writing. Get yourself a website and join up local film critic associations. So at least you can learn what the requirements are to be a film critic. And then you can get started. That right there would have saved me 3 years.
Yeah.
3 years. Had somebody just told me that, I would have saved 3 years of all that grinding in the beginning to know, to just get started. So, yeah, that there's definitely that challenge of inherent bias within the industry. And that's not to say that the PR people are racist or nothing like that, but it's just the structure of it all, you know.
It's access. And it's just another example of access. If you don't know, and if you can't speak the language, if you don't have somebody to help you understand how to navigate that space, you won't survive. You won't make it.
Yeah. No, it's 100% true. And it's one of the reasons why, you know, I mean, I was elected to be one of the directors of the Chicago Indie Critics. And the whole point of the organization, because there's already a Chicago Film Critic Association. That's where Richard Roper is at, you know. And if you're a big name, you write for the Sun-Times, the New York, whatever, you're in that association. But we started a separate group that I'm now a director of. And the purpose of it was to amplify diverse voices from diverse platforms. Because before, it was only like, unless you write for a newspaper, magazine, or you on TV, that's the only way you would get into the other organization. And it wasn't all that diverse, you know. So this other organization, which started from the ground up, they had scouted me and they were like, yeah, we want him. And, you know, after I got like a year or two into it, you know, I got to the director position. One of my main goals was I don't want nobody in our group to go through what I went through, because I would also even get in trouble. I mean, I told you about the embargo stuff, but like I would get in trouble with like unforeseen rules. Like you can't go to a movie that you haven't been invited to, even if the movie's free. Like it was just weird stuff. Again, it's weird stuff. Nobody's telling you nothing. So I created like this whole protocol basically. So like if people are new and they're like real serious about becoming a critic, and if they, you know, make it into our organization, you know the rules up front, you know the basic requirements on how to be consistent, and you are not going to be as surprised. And you have access to people that know the industry, know how to help you network, know how to help you navigate dealing with PR reps, know how to navigate and helping you do interviews and stuff. We have a system now to kind of help people not go through what we went through. So again, it's kind of like, man, I had to go through all this crap, but at least I'm paving the way for other people from all different walks of life at that, so that they don't have to go through that. But yeah, that is yet another journey, you know, in itself.
The HR operations side of me is so happy to hear about that protocol, because that's really where it is. Like, when there are all of these rules written and unwritten, and you already don't necessarily have access and mentorship, it's so that you don't have to recreate the rule, and being able to share that knowledge with people coming after you. Which leads me to my next question. What do you think is your greatest accomplishment thus far? So you said shout out to Facebook Memories. That was back in 2013 when you created that first post. So we 7 years in. What do you think is your greatest accomplishment, and what future dreams do you have for your show?
Man, I think right now, I guess it was just a personal thing, because, you know, obviously I'm still a fan, you know, of movies and stuff. Greatest accomplishment for me was like when I interviewed Chadwick Boseman back in 2016 for the movie Marshall. It was for a red carpet event. I wasn't even supposed to be there. Like literally, they called me 3 hours before. I was still at work. I hadn't changed. They was like, hey, I got denied even because I wasn't big enough. And somebody canceled and they was like, hey, you want to come in? And I was like, well, yeah. I drove all the way from downtown back to the burbs to my house, got my clothes, came back, drove back downtown just to make it. One man camera crew, okay? you know, and it was just, it was like, and then of course they put you all the way at the end of the carpet. I'm talking about like, you know, y'all be seeing the red carpets. No. For new and sometimes black media, you at the booty end where the carpet run out.
We still at the color like, section?
Woo, man, look.
The red carpet got a colored section?
It's got, I'm telling you, you don't see them because that's where the camera cuts off. You know, it's at the end of the carpet. So that's why you'll hear black media outlets really kind of get on or sometimes praise black celebrities when they do give them some opportunities and time, because sometimes it takes that celebrity to be like, no, I know we being rushed, but I need to go talk to my people real quick. So that's another industry thing. But yeah, talking to Chadwick was definitely something, because he was, that dude right there was like my idol for like a long time. And this was before Black Panther. So of course, with the time of the news of his untimely death and everything, it just kind of, that elevated above everything else, like getting all these subscribers going viral here and there, whatever. I got to talk to Chadwick. I was like, I could retire, you know, at this point. So that was probably definitely my most memorable thing. But if I can cheat and give you another one, I want to say the most moving thing that ever happened for me was doing a watch party for Black Panther for my community. So like I bought out the theater, brought all these prizes, grab bags, all this stuff. Like it was like a for real event. And I invited about 50 of the youth of my church to come on out. I wanted them to experience Black Panther for themselves. And it was one of the most, like I'm literally getting goosebumps just talking about it, because I was so excited about the passion that everybody had for something that they hadn't even seen yet. And then even when they saw it, they was just like all in love with it. People dressed up. It was all respectful. You had folks in their African garb. The most moving thing for me was just the kids, because the kids, when I was interviewing everybody after the movie, they were like, yo, like I'm so inspired to see someone like Shuri, the smartest woman on the planet who looks like me. And I'm just like, but this is what it's all about. This is like, these are the things that impact us, not just with movies, but with art. Being in the position to do community events like that, because I've done it for other movies as well, but just bringing the community together, having that like watch party community event is just, that right there is everything.
You know, I'm sitting over here on a Wakanda Forever.
Yes.
How have you grown personally since you began this journey? So how have you grown since you found your voice and as you're continuing to find your voice?
I feel like I've gained more responsibility with all this adulting that I have to do now. Like I can't afford to be irresponsible with my platform. When I know that I have the ability to reach hundreds of thousands of people or even millions sometimes if something goes viral, it puts more of an onus on me to be responsible and accountable for what I say, how I say it, and when I say things. So if I'm talking about difficult subjects or if I'm trying to point out issues that need to be addressed, I do believe that I have to do that in a non-Kanye way, you know, in a sense. Like, if I'm going to talk about something, I want to make sure I know what the hell I'm talking about, you know?
Yeah.
And if I'm going to convey a very important issue, I got to make sure I'm on point with it, you know? And if I'm the person to be able to articulate whatever the situation or issue might be, then so be it, you know? So I think taking on that burden is definitely something that I've grown into, because, you know, it's easy to just be like, not my problem. Let me just worry about the entertainment side. Let me just worry about me, you know, versus, all right, I can make a difference here. Let me do something about it or say something about it.
What is your favorite genre of film to review in a non-spoiler way?
Probably comic book movies, like the superhero stuff. I just love that world in itself. That's the most fun. That's the most entertaining, because I would say there's no risks involved with it outside of just fan backlash, you know, toxic fan backlash, but whatever. that's definitely the most fun. I would say the most fulfilling is anything that is sociopolitical. So if there's like a social element to something, so Get Out, for example, or Us, things that really touch on issues through movies, that's where that responsibility I was talking about kind of kicks in. And for me, the most fulfilling part of that is when I actually reach people, when I get people in my comments saying like, hey, I'm a 50-year-old white guy living in Arkansas, and you made me see this in a different way than I never thought of, you know, or something like that. Like, man, great. You know, like that in itself is awesome to me, you know, because maybe he wouldn't have had anyone talk to him that way, because it's so easy for people to just live in their own little social media bubbles and stuff. So, or live in the realm of confirmation bias. So if I can pierce through that with certain people, I love it. And that makes all the world of a difference for me.
What reaction video have you made that's gone viral that surprised you?
Probably, it was definitely the Black Panther one, because I had no idea anybody was, this is like when I had, again, like a couple hundred people and nobody was checking for me. And I did, like, when the Black Panther trailer came out, I was pumped. I mean, the soundtrack was bumping. I was like, oh my God, Chadwick's in this. And did you see that backflip? And I was just like, oh my, like, I was losing my mind. All of a sudden, for somebody that was only getting like 100 views here, 200 views there, or whatever, all of a sudden I had like a 15,000 view video. And I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. You know, like, that's when you get your first taste, you know, of virility. And you just like, oh my gosh, this is nice, you know. So yeah, that was probably the first time I definitely, for a reaction video anyway, that I was like, yo, this is kind of cool.
See, so I'm a TV show person. My sister, little honey Lauren, who loves your channel, she's a movie person. Shout out to Lil Lauren. Shout out to Lil Lauren. She can sit and watch movies all day, but I am more of a TV binger. So yeah. Now I want to ask you for some spoiler-free TV show descriptions. I'm going to name a few shows. I'm just curious on like your description of these shows before we dig a little bit into a TV show that has ignited all kind of passion and just curiosity from all kind of people. Okay. So the first TV show, give me your spoiler-free description for Watchmen.
Watchmen has to be probably one of the most relevant comic book based TV shows brought to the big screen. So you're going to get a lot of social elements in this fictional world that look very, very, very similar to the real world, and a huge what if, but an absolute must watch. Man, whether you've read the comic or watched the movie or not, that's just good stuff. It's so good.
Because Regina King was amazing.
Yes, yes. She's phenomenal. I mean, my man Yahya Abdul-Mateen, you know, he's dope as well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's made by the same guy who did, or he co-wrote Lost. On ABC. I know that got a lot of bad rep because of the terrible ending, but he did his magic in just those short few episodes. But no fillers, good stuff, good meaty content, plenty of things to actually, I think the best testimony that it has, and I won't spoil it, of course, is it does introduce people to a significant moment in Black history. You know, same way people discovered Juneteenth this year, they're going to discover one of the most atrocious moments in American history. And I love that show. It's so phenomenal. So phenomenal.
Must watch.
Must.
All right. Number two, another HBO special, Game of Thrones. Oh, yeah. But back to Watchmen, super bingeable, too. It's one season. Very. Super bingeable. Yes. All right. So now Game of Thrones, which has 8 seasons, HBO. Yeah. What's your description? All
right. So let me just say this. It is an investment. Game of Thrones is probably one of the top 3 best shows ever made, period. And that includes The Wire and Breaking Bad. Actually, I just gave you the top 3. The only problem with Game of Thrones is like the very last couple of episodes in the season where It's not terrible, but there is a bit of a letdown. Outside of that, everything else is masterfully done. If you're new to Game of Thrones, and let's just say you wanted to check it out now, you still can. It's probably better for me to give you a basic guide for it. You have to watch the first season. You cannot worry about knowing the names or knowing the places, because they're going to throw a lot of info at you. It won't matter. You just follow my man Ned Stark. As long as you follow Ned Stark, and you just pay attention to Ned Stark, that's all you need. If you cannot follow, I actually make a wager with a lot of people. If you can, because it's only like 8 episodes, I think, for the first season. If you can get through that first season following Ned Stark, it's impossible to put this down. It's impossible. Like, you will be hooked after that. So ignore all the other crap. And just make it to the end of the first season, and you will love it. You will love it. I don't even like medieval dragon, Lord of the Rings. I don't even go for that stuff. And I know a lot of people probably don't either. But this show will make you a believer. So I'll say that for it.
I didn't know that I was a fan of the medieval and the dragons until I started Game of Thrones. And yeah. I binged it. So on the scale of bingeability, it's super bingeable because the whole series is done. But it's dangerous because they are hour-long episodes. And I'm telling you, you will not be able to leave your device. You will not leave your device.
The sun gonna go down. You're going to be like, what day is it?
You're going to be on Pinterest every season. You're going to go find reaction videos. You're going to go find maps. You're going to be doing all kind of research that you never thought you'd be doing on these mythical characters in this mythical world with these dragons.
Yep. All of that.
All of that. All right, Game of Thrones. Number 3, Atlanta.
Atlanta is, I want to say, one of the most creative shows out there and needed. I love what Atlanta does from Donald Glover, because it's never like the same thing on every episode, even though it's all the same show. It's not like an anthology. It's just that one minute you're getting almost like a sketch comedy, then the next minute you're getting like a for real drama, and then the next minute you're getting like, I don't know, a history lesson or something. You know, it's just like, this was the one word I would give it is fresh, because you're always going to get something new and different, and it's going to feel unlike anything that you've ever seen. And it's just, the writing is just brilliant. And I love Atlanta. I love it. It's almost like a live action Boondocks.
It is.
It reminds me of that. Yeah.
It is. I love Atlanta. If I had to choose one word at this time, it would be haunting. And that's because Robin season, the most recent season, stayed with me. Stayed with me. Like, when you talk about just the different writing and how it shows up from week to week, we went from a drama with Paperboy's story, a horror with Darius's story, a comedy with the Where is Drake. Like, so many emotions in that show.
What was that guy's name? Teddy Pendergast? No, what was it?
Oh, God. Teddy Perkins.
He's still creepy.
He is so creepy. Teddy Perkins. Like, so I would say haunting because it stayed with me. Oh, and Atlanta is also super bingeable.
Yeah. Yep.
What is The Boys?
The Boys. So The Boys is based on an actual comic book. What it does is it kind of like flips your common superhero genre upside down. What I love about it is it puts a very realistic and dark twist on Supermans and Wonder Womans and Captain America's, like all these other comic books that or stories that we've kind of grown up with. This is the more adult version, definitely more violent. But what I like about it is it adds like this other social element to it, where like, imagine if superheroes were real, you know, and they were cutting movie deals and they're like celebrities and they have agencies, they have publicists, you know, and there's greed, corruption, murder, betrayal. I mean, it's like, it's all of that. It's everything. It's also super bingeable too. I mean, it's only 8 episodes. Right now, they only have 2 seasons. The stories are really good. The character development is pretty good as well. And yeah, there's, they always manage to find something to shock you with. as well. So it's definitely a high recommendation, especially if you've come from watching other comic book and superhero movies, just so you can understand and appreciate the parodies and the satire even more. But even if you don't, you can still watch it and be like, whoa, you know, because, and I don't want to give too much away, because the fun part about it is discovering how unconventional so many of the characters are. Like, you might think, oh, no, that's the hero, or not. It's everybody's got different layers to them, and it's really, really good stuff. It's good stuff.
Okay, so I'm going to have to check that out. I'm going to trust you, because I've not seen The Boys. So I'm going to trust you, and I'm going to go check it out. I'm going to follow up with you.
I wouldn't steer you wrong.
Good, because now I need to trust you on this next one.
Okay.
Lovecraft.
Ooh.
So I realized that I was watching something brilliant. I recognized that. But my brain could not recognize what it is that I was watching.
Yes, so you're not alone with that.
If I had to describe Lovecraft as a food item, it is a seafood boil. Mm. If I had to describe this as a dish, it is a seafood boil. You got to work. It is crab legs. Every single storyline is a different ingredient in this seafood boil. And I think I was excited enough to get enough crab leg meat out of one of the storylines that I kind of walked away like, okay, I think I know what's happening. But there was so many other things.
You missed the potatoes and the corn and the rice that was all the way at the bottom. You done missed it all.
I missed so much. So give us a spoiler-free description of Lovecraft Country and why this show is what we need.
So magic, monsters, horror, and good old-fashioned Jim Crow racism. You put all of that together with a dash of sci-fi, and that's it. I mean, this is a smorgasbord of everything I think Black folks have not had a prominent voice in doing. Misha Green, who's like the showrunner, writer, director, you know, she grew up as a fan of horror, but she's also like a Black nerd also. So there are comic book elements in this. There are foreign influences in this as well. You've got, of course, the social dynamic, because we're in the time and setting of Jim Crow, but we're dealing with like magic, and there's still a horror element because Jordan Peele is one of the executive producers on this as well. So you're going to see elements of like Get Out in this, you know, there are going to be familiar things and messages there, but also because I think there's a Black woman behind this, you're going to see different themes elevated through the characters, and Black girl magic is going to take like a literal form in some senses, you know. And it's a beautifully layered type of show, because you think you're going in for the entertainment value, and it will give that to you. But then next thing you know, you've got all these historical references and stuff. You've got all these little Easter eggs, and it was very intentional. You know, the writing staff is very diverse because they want to highlight things that don't get talked about. So you will have female issues or Black issues or LGBTQ issues, toxic masculinity issues, racism, you know, you'll get these things in different forms, and it's almost like they just slip it in here and there, and sometimes they just throw it right in your face. It's impossible to, I mean, look, I was just like you. When I first started watching it, I didn't know how deep I was getting into this. All I was doing was cracking the crab meat too. That's all I was like, yo, I thought we were just eating crab. I didn't know there were sides. I didn't know. Nobody told me, you know? And then even as I started doing coverage for this stuff, if you follow my videos, you'll notice that my videos get longer and longer and longer, because I started realizing like, oh, that was in this. And oh, y'all talked about, oh, I missed that, you know? So then as you get into the show and you get deeper, you start to pay more attention to stuff, and you start to realize like, this is like a college course, essentially. And the creators are very intentional about that, because they recognize that a lot of the information presented are not things taught in school. They're not things that the general public knows that we should know about. And they're not afraid to put that out there. The best part about it is how they will talk about things from the 1950s and how it's eerily still similar to today. So it's a much needed television show. I mean, one thing I put out there was, because Watchmen kind of touched on some of these issues, but it didn't go as deep as Lovecraft Country did. So I was like, yo, Watchmen walked so that Lovecraft Country could fly. And that's essentially what's happening. Like, Lovecraft Country is like, man, whatever. We don't have no bear. We go on there, and they do. You know, it's a lot. It's impossible for you not to find something. And here's the other thing. Because it is so much, it can be intimidating for some people. It's not going to gravitate to everybody because some of this stuff is weird. So just kind of heads up. Don't feel bad if you're not into horror, this is not a movie for you. This is not a show for you. If you don't like heady sci-fi stuff, this is not for you. Because you're just going to get lost in the sauce. So
the crab leg sauce.
Yeah, you know, so, you know, like, if you think the regular seasoning is too spicy, the show ain't for you. It's just, and that's okay, you know, but yeah, I mean, otherwise, look, this is needed because I think this is one of those shows that pushes so many boundaries. It also breaks a lot of the stigmas within the industry of Black don't sell. And that's always been a lie, even with Black movies. Like, the reason why Black films don't get funded is because the higher up executives believe that they won't make their money from them. Mm-hmm. But that's never been true. Like, Black movies don't really flop. They usually make their money back and then a little bit more because their budget is so low. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, but then all of a sudden you have something like Black Panther, where it's like an all Black crew, all Black cast, all Black, you know, production team. And then now they're making $1 billion. So,
come on, $1 billion.
Like, I'm just saying, like, I mean, they broke records though. And even Marvel at the time was like, we didn't see this coming. We didn't, had we known, we would have gave y'all more money, you know, but, I think that's kind of what Lovecraft Country is doing, because the one indication I usually like to look at to see if a show is popping or not, are people talking about it? Is it getting the people going? Is it provocative? You know, and this is like this generates legit conversations with people way after the episodes, you know, show. So that to me, again, is like a supreme sign of like quality art.
So we are going to, for anybody who did not want any spoilers, go ahead. Thank you. Thanks. Because now I want to get a little bit deeper in the few minutes that we have left into Lovecraft and some of your kind of thoughts and analysis on the show and some of the themes. You brought up in your video, so your last video was long. It was like 38 minutes. I'm like, okay, you finna bring it all together. We about to get all these ingredients in this seafood boil. But you brought up about like some of the parallels between the story and Christianity. And of course, as a viewer, I could not help but notice some of those parallels as well. So, like, what were some of the things that you saw that kind of made you make connections from this story to our Christian faith? And, like, what do you think it all kind of meant?
You know, I mean, so, of course, you know, I had to put my seminary hat on, like, as I was watching this, because I think it was, like, episode 2 where they just turned up, like, for no reason. And they just cranked up the show, and then it was talking about Adam and Eve, and it was doing all this. I'm like, what is going on? This has got to be the work of the devil, you know, because they just out here flipping everything around, and I'm like, that ain't in the Bible. What are y'all talking about? You know, so the thing is that I just started to notice the parallels in the final episode, because Tick started to have, like, this messianic type of journey where he knows he's supposed to die. He knows that it's also for the greater good, Hannah's spell. He knows that it's necessary. And at the same time, he's scared. He's nervous. He's apprehensive. Kind of like even with Jesus, like when Jesus went to go pray and he was just like, you know, sweating so much, it was like drops of blood. And he was, you know, asking God, like, hey, if you change your mind, you know, like, you want to take this cup, it's cool with me.
I won't be mad at you. I won't be mad. Gonna be mad at
you, but, you know, if I got to do it, I got to do it, you know, and I just kind of saw that, you know, with Tick going and to this ancestral place, this sacred place, you know, talking to his mother, finding comfort that way. And some things are inverted, of course, you know, instead of talking to the father, you're talking to the mother, you know, and then, of course, you know, you have like more obvious things. I mean, he goes and gets baptized just like Jesus goes to get baptized in his dying position. He's like in this crucifix type of position. The one thing that was kind of interesting that I didn't even notice was the whole time I thought Tick was strapped down. Mm-hmm. He wasn't completely strapped. His hands were being, he was holding his hands up there. So while he's getting cut on his arms, while he's bleeding out, his hands are still holding on to that altar until he literally dies. And then you see his arms fall. And I was like, wait a minute. You mean to tell me all this time, especially when you found out Letty was dead, or you thought you could have just been like, I'm done. Unstrap yourself and get off and beat Christina up if you needed. You could have done that, but he made that conscious decision to let it go through. And I was just like, that reminded me of Christ, because Jesus could, he had all the power. He could have just been like, I really shouldn't be up here, but I know I have to. So I'm going to let this go. I'm gonna do what I got to do.
I'm going to trust the story.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, there were other things too, just like the disciples watching Christ dying and not being able to do anything, you know, or Christina, the main antagonist of the story, trying to give Atticus like a proposition to make it easier. And I was like, that's just like when the devil tempted Jesus. It was like, hey, man, you ain't got to do all this. All you got to do is give me the power and the recognition. And in this case, in the show, it was like, just give me the book of names, you know, which, by the way, I want to say is the translation for the book of Exodus. I think in Hebrew, it's called like the book of names. Don't quote me on that, but I think it is. So, yeah, I mean, you know, this show definitely was being intentional, I think, with showing those parallels. But it's always kind of been there, you know, like they've always had these elements of, we have a different view of Christianity mm-hmm. than other people, you know. Now, whether you want to call it satanic or not, I don't know. The elements that were still present. I mean, and that's just really just one of the themes, you know, the Christian type of element. That's just one of the layers. I mean, mm-hmm. there were so many other things in there. Like, I want to say
the entanglements that blew me away.
See, that whole entanglement
that blew me away.
I'm like, y'all still doing it? Oh my goodness. You got entanglements. You got issues of black women being ignored with Diana. They left this baby alone I don't know how many times, ignored her how many times. She literally couldn't even have a voice at times because of the curse and everything. You have that. I mean, you have police brutality. You've got systemic racism and stuff, just in terms of like how different things function.
That redlining when they bought the house. The ancestors showing up. Are, like, the visuals. The visuals.
Come on now. Surrounded by the ancestors. You know, this show is rich. It is so rich with everything I want to say black folks have always wanted to do creatively. And I think that's why it is kind of overwhelming in a sense. Mm-hmm. Because if you think about it, other shows that, you know, are made by white creators, white leads, and so on, they get to dib and dab in these things. You know, like, maybe the show is about this one theme, or maybe it's about this other thing. For us, it's kind of like, yo, we got a whole shotgun, and we got to load this up, and just boo-bow. We just take this buckshot of everything, and whatever lands, you know. Yeah, I mean, this show is just, it's brilliant. It's not perfect, because there are some things in there, I think, some people do have issues with, legitimate issues. So, for example, I mean, I've heard, you know, people in my comments, you have members of the LGBTQ community that are not that happy with how Montrose is portrayed, for example.
Yeah.
You have indigenous people that are not that happy with how the indigenous woman was portrayed and then quickly gotten rid of.
Hello.
You know, things that, you know, even Misha Green, she's like admitted, like, I failed at that. Like, I failed at representing them. And I appreciate that level of accountability, too, you know, for sure. But at the same time, I'm sitting here like, oh. Then you also got the issue of, like, the hetero black men. Uncle George is gone. Tick is gone. It's like, dang, we can't live. We can't really, you know. So it's one of those things that comes along with bold storytelling.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're not going to make everybody happy. And the way I've kind of described it is kind of like, it's no different than how no one person is going to have that one magic solution to fix all the problems of black people around the world. There are too many issues. They're too complicated, too deeply rooted, that even when you get one good solution, I mean, look at Black Lives Matter. The second Black Lives Matter came to talk about police brutality, people was like, but what about black on black crime? What about this? What about abortion? How come y'all don't care about this? And it's like, we don't have the luxury to just be, you know? And this show, I think, is just trying to be its own thing, even though people want it to be more because it's so good. You know, it carries that extra expectation.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's fabulous. I'm hoping for a season two. I really need a season two because there's a lot of stuff that we need answers to.
Absolutely. So,
yeah.
Thank you so much for coming to the podcast and sharing your origin story, walking us through, letting us know about some of the rules of the game, some of the advice that you had to learn, and then also breaking down some of the shows that you've given us your rating for. Oh, how bingeable and how watchable is.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Very. But I would say this. If you are, you got to make it past or up to episode 5. So it's 10 episodes. Every episode's like 45 minutes to an hour, give or take. If you can't hang by episode 5, that's when you know it's probably not for you. But it does get better the longer you stay invested in it. So
just like a seafood boil. It takes a little bit of work. You got to crack the crab legs. You got to peel the shrimp.
You know the bag be hot. So you got to kind of work on the little stuff at first until it cools down. Then you can really dig in. So yeah. It's going to start good in the first episode. It's going to go to 10 on the second one. It's going to go back down. You just got to get a feel for it. And it would, you know, not to toot my own horn, it would be helpful to watch breakdown videos after because you are going to miss a whole bunch of stuff.
Where can people find your videos? Because that is absolutely true. You helped me through this show with your videos. How can people find you and follow you?
E-Man's Movie Reviews. Definitely, you could just search me on YouTube. E-Man, it's just like He-Man without the H. you can find me there. Matter of fact, look, you can, if you're looking for Lovecraft Country, if you type it in, Lovecraft Country Explained, I should be like one of the top search results because there aren't a lot of us reviewing it, and I personally think some other outlets are a little afraid to touch on these subjects, so you can definitely find me there. By all means, please find me on Facebook as well, E-Man's Movie Reviews. You get trailers, reviews, the latest movie news, and everybody, for whatever reason, loves the movie memes, so we always have a good time there, and I do giveaways and stuff too, so absolutely, E-Man's Movie Reviews, come and holler at your boy.
Fantastic. Thank you, E-Man. Thank you for coming on the show. And we will talk to y'all later. Bye. All right, superstars, we are all out of time. Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you love the show, make sure to subscribe, share, review the episodes, tag a friend, talk to me. Visit DanielleMoneyham.com and follow me on social media to stay connected. Your support means the world to me, so thank you for helping my dreams come true. A major lesson that I learned, that I continue to learn, is that although you will experience dark moments in your journey, you can be the light. You have more power than you know. Until we meet again, shine bright.